And we are back. I have, should have, Ian Taves on the line. Are you there, Ian?
I have a kind of a bad signal here. I'm not sure why.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Can you hear me all right?
Well, I can. It's a bit sort of rattly, but...
All right. Well, hopefully we'll see what we can do about that in the time being. Let's see what we can do here. So obviously we've had you on the program before. This is for a similar project that was for a previous project with the CBC CBC documentary channel. But today we're talking about the nature of inspiration, and this is something where you've gone and interviewed several prominent Canadian visual artists of all types and talked to them about how their work relates to the environment. Is that roughly correct?
That is correct. Yes.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about, I guess, where even just the idea for the project in the first place came from?
Well, it's kind of like we went backwards. We had done a series for five seasons for Bravo called Landscape as Muse. And through the course of that, we'd interviewed 51 Canadian artists. There was an extensive sort of archive of unused material, and particularly interviews, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 hour interviews that we one time sort of sat around and realized, you know, there's some excellent stuff in here, and there maybe there's another way to approach a new project. So the new project was just a kind of a refinement of all that material and refocusing of ideas. I also conducted new interviews with those same artists, with almost all of them, so I added another 5 or 6 hours to each of them, so there's quite a pile to pull through.
So there's been a theme. We've spoken to you, I believe, I'm pretty sure this is the second time we've spoken to you, but both projects, obviously, because you were on the program, had an environmental kind of frame of reference for them. So I see you're really taking that to heart, and that we're even recycling to the extent of some of the old materials sitting around in the CBC archives there. But yeah, you're putting sustainability into real practice there, Ian. I think that's the story.
Sure.
So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the artists that you chose to use here and maybe some of the experiences of going back and re-interviewing them? I see some of the names here just off the top of the... there's Edward Bertinsky and media artist Marlene Creates and a few other names here. Were some of the people that you decided to choose for this project?
Yeah, there was 9 of them. Out of the 51 we had originally used in the other show, we kind of looked at the interviews, what was already there, what they had said, and what they might say again. You know, some of them we were revisiting after 6 or 7 years. I wish it were different, but it seems to me that the older ones were just a little more wise. So that there tends to be a bit of a skew towards the older, more established artists.
Okay.
They just have a lot of wisdom. I mean, one guy in particular, Tacton Abbey from Vancouver Island, he's 86 years old. I mean, the guy's been painting since the 50s.
Wow.
I mean, what a wealth of information and ideas, right? So how can you, in a way, how can you choose somebody, you know, sort of younger over a guy like him, right? There was just so much, you know, more interesting sort of stories and historical sweep to his work.
Absolutely. And did you find that, I mean, in general, when we're talking about artists, I'm very much a non-artist sort of person. I like, organizing things and that sort of whatnot. I'm the other side of the brain. But I do very much appreciate art. And one of the things I think that people generally associate when you kind of take some stereotypes and take kind of a stereotype of an artist and then a stereotype of people who are interested in the environment, you probably end up with if you close your eyes and imagine it, you probably end up with some sort of... guy in Birkenstocks wearing cutoff pants and all this sort of thing. But it seems I get the idea that this would be a very philosophical piece and that the combination of kind of the backgrounds of these interests and then also the age of these being kind of established artists. How far did you get as far as just talking about even just like philosophy of environment and that sort of thing? You said there was a lot of wisdom. Like what types of things did the artists choose to talk about?
Oh, yeah, no, I think that's just it. I mean, the main thrust of our interviewing was, there's numerous questions, and they get very philosophical. We go into these kind of tangents, and they're really just, you know, they're just conversations. They're conversations with a, you know, kind of wide-eyed guy on one end of it, that's me, and then these wise sages on the other side of the camera, which is the artist. They talk a lot about the scope of their career and perseverance through career. I mean, the ups and downs, how to make art, how to continue to make art when everything is kind of... A lot of times, a lot of things are pushing against that, which just seems to be a metaphor for maybe the environment movement in a way. To, you know, being a sustainable person in Canada these days with the political winds blowing the way they're blowing, it seems like it's quite an uphill battle, frustrating battle. And I think the artists can sort of teach us that. And more specifically, all of them work in nature or landscape, so they do they do have a sort of shared philosophy that way.
If I can get on my soapbox for a minute, we did an interview very recently, actually, talking with where we talked a lot about the kind of philosophy and the idea of just kind of how important community is to anyone who's would either identify themselves as an activist or just an interested person in the environment, because there are so many challenges. That idea of having community around you is giving you something the strength and the courage to keep on doing it. I would just see that something about like artwork would be a very intensely personal and yet mass media way of kind of sharing that sense of community.
Yeah, I think your phone was just breaking up a bit there still. Are you hearing me clearly? Is that working?
Yeah, actually, we're hearing you just fine. I'll just repeat the question, basically. I was just asking about the idea of like whether they saw this as sort of a sense of doing their art was almost a way of spreading community around environmental issues in any way, or if this was mostly just that art was the inspiration for it.
I think so. I think one guy in particular speaks to that quite specifically, and which is Peter von Thiessenhausen from Alberta. He speaks a lot about it's a little more cryptic. He talks about sort of sending messages out into the world in a way with his art, and that gets into more Eastern philosophies, I suppose, about just you reap what you beget what you. What are the words I'm looking for? You sort of get back what you give out, and his art is part of that.
Perhaps you were looking for reap what you sow.
sort of, but not quite what you sow. But you know what I mean. He just has a belief that the art has a way of touching people in very small ways, kind of like the butterfly effect. It's just a very small gesture can have a huge resonance across massive distances.
Sure. I've actually got a quote from Peter von Thiessenhausen. Is that what he said?
Thiessenhausen,
yeah. It says, art is creation, thereby unifying yourself with all other creation and becoming connected to the divinity that dwells within us all. I think that kind of sums up what you were getting at there.
Much better than I could, yeah.
I was cheating, of course, quoting him directly. But I think the idea here is obviously, I think a lot of Canadian artists, I mean, artists in general, but specifically with my limited knowledge of art and Canadian art specifically, nature has always been, and I think will always be because of our national identity, one of the strongest possible places for inspiration. I think, it is for most artists in general, but specifically for Canadian artists. I mean, when you think of classical pieces, the Group of Seven and all this sort of thing. Did you get into any conversations with any of these artists about them?
I'm still losing you there. Are you there at all?
Oh, yeah, we can. We're getting you a little bit rough there, but I can still sort of hear you. Can you hear me there?
I got you a bit now, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that, folks out there in audio land, just having a little bit of trouble with the phone line today. I'll ask again that with nature being a source of inspiration for the actual artwork, did you speak to any of the artists who talked about in any way using any sustainability ideas in the actual production of their art, either trying to find less toxic paints or anything as far as the actual production of the art from an environment standpoint, or was it just mostly that this was a sense of inspiration for them?
I have to apologize. I got the last sentence or two there, and the rest was all kind of noise. Darn.
Okay. Sorry.
You're good.
I'll try one more time. We'll see if we can sneak it out there. We was just wondering if you found any of the artists who had incorporated sustainability into the actual production of their art rather than just using nature as an inspiration.
Oh, that's a really good question. I think again, Mr. Thiessenhausen is one who tends to do a lot of that. He tends to recycle materials, use found materials, natural materials as well, so there's not a really ecological footprint, using wood and ice sometimes. I think he was one example of that. I would say Dempsey Bob is another one. He uses local trees that are sort of harvested in a very simple way, and they're carved into masks. Agonisa Dick using bees, which is a whole other, that's another level of discussion as well. I mean, she's using bees to make art. She helps. They help her make sort of sculptural pieces. But in addition, in a sort of a small way, she's a supporter of bees. And bees, as we all know, are of critical importance to the survival of our entire planet.
Absolutely.
So hers is art where the bees sort of crawl over found objects, and crawl over pieces of paper, and tiny sculptural pieces. So there's certainly really no ecological footprint, and she brings a certain awareness. So I suppose the awareness that she brings to bees is part of a contribution. in a positive sense. John Chalk, a ceramic artist, also basically just harvesting clay and turning that into fine ceramic work. A lot of the glazes he uses are made from just ash and those kind of natural elements. So there's quite a sustainable point to his work. And even his kilns are wood-fired. They're sort of hand-built Japanese-inspired kilns. The wood that he burns is basically fallen wood on his acreage. So certainly some of them are, you know, quite explicitly using sustainable practices in their work, and others, of course, just believe strongly in sustainability and they spread the message. You think of a guy like Ed Bertinsky with his kind of reach in the art world. I mean, the way that his work resonates everywhere and on the globe. I mean, his paintings are all over the world. Everybody knows who he is. He's quite famous. So then you start to ask yourself, well, what's the message here? I mean, if Ed shows you, you know, a 6x12 photograph of a copper mine that, you know, arrests you in such a way that you're driven to action, well, there's a value to that. And even though he had to use chemicals to make that print, maybe, you know what I mean? There's sort of a trade-off there.
Definitely, yeah.
In terms of the educational power of his work. Yeah, it's a great discussion point. I mean, that's one that we did. It's certainly in various times and tangents in our interviews with all of these guys, we discussed that process as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, again, I apologize to both our guest and to our listeners. We are having a bit of trouble with the phone today. So I think, Ian, I'm just going to try and shorten my question as much as possible. We've got enough time for one more. So my last question before we're going to let you go today is just what's next on your project list? We've got a couple of strong environment projects.
I think I've lost you again there. Now you're back. As soon as you stop talking, it kind of clears off.
We're just wondering what's next for you. What's your next project going to look like?
Oh, what's next? We're in the middle of a show that we've been doing. It's our second season. It's called Untamed Gourmet, and it's a show about wild and gathered food. Chefs basically across Canada who go out with, some of them are Aboriginal, but others go out with Aboriginal guides, and they look at traditional food gathering techniques through Aboriginal eyes as well as their own sort of culinary training. Gather, hunt, fish, trap. However they get food, they use it, and then they make a gourmet meal out of that. And it's in its second season on television on APTN.
Great.
Turned from PEI, and we gathered clams and oysters and lobster and various greens from the beaches and made a beautiful feast there.
That sounds great. So the Nature of Inspiration, if people want to catch that, that is going to be on August 4th, which is, if you're listening live here in Toronto, that's tomorrow. But Saturday, August 4th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and also going to be repeated at Sunday, August 5th, which is 2 days from now, August, if you're listening live, however, which is August 5th at 8 p.m. So that's August 4th at 6 and August 5th at 8. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ian Taves, if you can hear me.
Always a pleasure. I think it's my point to talk because I can't hear because of the line. But always a pleasure. Thanks, and hello to Toronto.
Thank you so much. All right, have a great day. Okay, so again, sorry for a little bit of trouble there, folks, but we should be fine from now on.